This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, Sex and the City fans. Megan McKeever here. Check out my podcast, Cosmos and the City, where I'll be watching through the entire series of Sex and the City with a slew of fabulous guests. Each week, we'll be talking through everything from who wore what and why to the hottie of the week. So grab a drink and join me on my journey. Thanks, and be sure to subscribe to Cosmos and the City in iTunes or your favorite podcasting app.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Improv Obsession Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Perlstein, and today, coming up in a minute, is Jimmy Crane, the improv nerd himself. He is cool enough in his visit to LA to come talk to me a bit about improv. But before we get to that, we're going to do the usual plugs. Please rate and subscribe to the show in iTunes. It's always appreciated when it happens. Helps the rankings, blah, 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 analytics, search engine optimization, whatever. Also, you can check out facebook.com/improvobsession. They'll keep you up to date on all the kinds of improv stuffs that are going on, as well as improvobsession.com. You can follow the Tumblr there. I recently posted a little article about what I learned from Eliza Skinner, and I'm always posting class notes and, interesting improv stuff. Also at improvobsession.com, I've opened up for financial support. You can find a little PayPal and Amazon payments link there if you want to throw in a few bucks to help keep the show online. That would be super helpful. Some of you know I ran into financial troubles not too long ago, and somebody who came to the aid is a person named Otto Aiken. I'm going to assume it's Aiken, like Clay Aiken. Who knows? Otto Aiken is the latest Improv Obsession hero. He donated a few bucks to keep the show free for all of you lovely people, and he's an improv hero, and he gets one of his questions answered in the show today. So yay. Thanks, Otto. You are an Improv Obsession hero. I hope you enjoy the show. Here it goes. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Improv Obsession Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Perlstein. Today, special guest, improv nerd, Jimmy Crane. Hi.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. So, there's a lot to talk about with you. I'm really excited about it. I don't even know where to begin. But actually, you know, we should tell people, like, who you are and stuff for my listeners. Like, I don't know, like people, I was going to say, maybe they know you from Jazz Freddy, from your book Improvising Better that you wrote with Liz Allen, from The Art of Slow Comedy, from your podcast, The Improv Nerd. I don't know if I'm missing any other stuff.
What were we going to say?
The Annoyance.
Yes, that. The Annoyance.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, I've been doing it for about 25 years. I'm out of
Jesus
Chicago.
Christ.
Yeah.
You've been doing it for longer than I've been alive.
How old are you?
24.
You're kidding me.
I'm not.
You act a lot older than you.
Thank you. I try.
Okay. All right. So I've been doing it for 25 years in Chicago.
Yeah.
When long form was, it was a really small community.
Yeah.
And so I've been teaching for probably 17 years.
Okay.
And I started at I.O. and then the Annoyance Theater, and then did in between there Jazz Freddy and another group called the Comedy Underground, which we just did short form.
Okay.
And then bounce back and forth teaching at Second City and I.O., and now I teach for myself the Art of Slow Comedy.
That's great. I like your podcast a lot.
Thank you, Improv Nerd. I love doing it. Yeah.
It's really great, and what I specifically love about it is I think you focus on something that I don't focus on as much, and that's like history and stuff. It just seems like you every single episode you're like, you remember blank doing this at the one place.
Right. I do that so, one, for history, but two, so the listeners are like, oh, that guy's been around. Because here's the thing about being old and doing improv, sure. And I'm almost going to be 49,
yeah.
Is that people's attention span, especially in Chicago, used to be that people would hang around. And I remember Jon Favreau, you know, who directed Anchorman and stuff like that, he used to refer to Chicago as the salt mine of comedy. And it was really like Chicago back in the late 80s, early 90s, was like an artist community. If people would have said after two or three years of doing improv, I'm going to go to L.A. or I'm going to go to New York, people would be like, you're totally selling out.
Yeah.
So, and I thought, you know, I've been in Chicago for, you know, my whole life, that people would remember. But is you know, like your generation and generations, you know, before and after, they don't know who I am.
Yeah.
So it's like, I basically say it like, oh, remember this? So people go, oh, this guy has some credibility, has some street cred.
Well, yeah, I think that's funny because it's, I think there's still, and maybe it's part and part doing things like that, but I do think there's like plenty of reverence and legend still existing in Chicago. And part of me thinks like, is that entirely manufactured? Because I've seen some really great improv out here. And not only that, but a lot of the great improv from Chicago and New York seems to just come out to LA and eventually anyway. And I get to see them whenever I want. But that's a whole nother topic. I don't know.
I think, you know, I don't know, because improv, when I started, Chicago was the only place to do Chicago-style improv.
Right.
And then, you know, the UCB, Besser and Walsh and Roberts and Poehler, they all left Chicago and they started that. And then, as we all know, after that, you know, Ollie started The Pit and Armando. And then, you know, they had whatever went on there. I could only guess. So he starts The Magnet. Then I.O. comes out here. Then UCB eventually comes out here. Second City comes out here. And so Chicago isn't the only place anymore.
Yeah.
Now, I think the difference about Chicago is that's different to, with at least LA and I probably New York, is you can get stage time pretty easily. It's more in Chicago.
Hmm.
You know, and I think
at the theaters, you mean?
Well, at the theaters, or do your own thing. You know, like we did Jazz Freddy, which, you know, you referenced at the top of the podcast. And Jazz Freddy was something that we always wanted to do. We a group of us, which, you know, you probably know, like Dave Koechner and Kevin Dorff, who wrote for Conan, and Noah Gregoropoulos, who's this, you know, really is kind of an heir apparent to Del Close in Chicago. Brian Stack, who writes for Conan, Miriam Toll and his wife, and we always wanted to do like more theatrical improvisation. And it was really Pete Gardner's idea. And he had really been influenced by a group called Ed, which was people out of Northwestern in Chicago. And so he took that model and we brought long form into theater. And what I'm really proud about that show is people, generations will come up to me and go, oh, like Craig Kakowski, you mentioned, he was a huge fan of Jazz Freddy and went and saw that. And that inspired him to, you know, do what he does. And he's a great improviser. The point that I'm making, and I'm really long-winded on this,
please,
is that in Chicago, you could go and do your own stuff, you know, outside of the institutions, like we did with Jazz Freddy, and, you know, get noticed, make a little money, and not get rich, but, you know, it was your own thing. And that's why I've always had this in my heart, because Jazz Freddy was such a great experience, not only creatively, but producing-wise. We all kind of produced it together, you know, hanging up posters and getting our friends and to come to the show and getting great reviews. That I always have a soft spot in my heart for the people that do independent stuff outside of the institutions.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, listening to that, like, I don't, I think L.A., I was kind of mentioning to you before, has a really interesting indie improv scene. Like, there are shows that are just, are like, two-person only shows. It's just a whole night. It's like, we only bring in two people shows. And that's, I think we have a really interesting indie improv scene. But it sounds to me like there's, like, people who go and create, shows for themselves, like a Jazz Freddy show. We do, it seems like out here there's a lot of shows that are like, oh, we'll bring in, you know, five teams to do a show one night, and also one of them will be like the host team or whatever. But, is that sounds
Yeah, that's but Chicago, it's more like, see, the benefit of Chicago is you're not affected by there's no opportunities.
Yeah,
that's the great thing.
Yeah,
that's the bad thing too. You know,
yeah.
So people will, you know, so you have time to develop. You have time to develop and not feel pressure, you know,
yeah.
Or feel like, you know, and you know, I heard this with when Besser took the original four to New York, there was talk that he was going to, you know, why don't you go to L.A.? And he really felt that taking them to New York, they wouldn't get cherry picked. Now, that's
right.
A rumor, you know, but I think there was probably some truth to that.
Right. I've heard New York and Chicago both go like that's where you go to learn, and L.A. is where you go to sell and showcase or
right.
whatever.
And the ramp of L.A. was with improv, and I think it's changed because you've had these Chicago people like Beer Shark Mice and
yeah.
Stephanie Ware and Bob Dassey and Miles
like
and Heather and The Reckoning. You know, it's not like they're not looking to get a TV deal out of it. They're
yeah.
doing it because they love it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it more than anything. It's just like, oh, Chicago's the pure stuff, the uncut improv.
Because we know that improv didn't get us. I mean, it's not going to lead to anything.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to get some money, you'll get some critical praise, you'll get some groupies. But, you know, when you're doing it in Chicago, nobody's going to come in and give you a four-picture deal. It
yeah.
just doesn't happen.
Which is, to me, almost sad about Chicago. I love that people are, like, learning and trying to get better. But I'm like, oh, no, like, don't. But it's in a way, it sounds hopeless. I'm like, no, like, if you're good, like, go do something.
Well, and that's why people eventually come out here,
yeah, that's
you
why,
know,
yeah.
or go to New York.
Yeah. And good for them. We want success
yes,
all around.
Yes, we do.
The improv community. I'm always very excited every time I hear anybody on TV or, you know, whatever movie is like, oh, they did improv and wherever. I'm like, good for you. Good. I want people to understand improv's really great. That's all. That's it. All right. So, no, actually, you know what? No, I try to very much talk about, like theory and method and stuff a lot.
Okay.
I want to talk, about slow play, but, maybe before we start, let's talk, can we just define a couple of terms?
We can do whatever you want.
Let's
sure.
try to define some terms. Like, cause I wonder if it's that different. I don't know. Like game. What does that mean to you?
Game is, to me, in terms of how I teach it is, it's, you know, finding whatever it is. You, like, it can be an emotional game. Like, let's say we're doing a scene and every time I touch you, this is a very simple game. Every time I touch you, you get upset.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Well, the game is for me to continue to touch you and you to heighten your emotional stake.
Yeah.
You know, your emotional being.
Okay.
So you'll just get more and more frustrated at me. And that to me is a very, very simple game.
Uh-huh. Action and response type of thing. That's kind of what happens. What triggers something to happen and then what happens?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, there's more. I mean, certainly I go into the verbal games too as well, you know, heightening an idea or something like that. But that's really not my forte.
Okay. That's fair. And then what, like an initiation? What's that?
Well, I teach, like for me, the student, a lot of things that I'll see with students is that the words will get in their way. They
sure.
will put so much pressure on themselves to be funny.
Yeah.
And I've been doing this for a long time. I do not want to watch bad improv.
Yeah.
I want to go in. I'm stealing this from Norm Holly. I want them to entertain me. All right. And I want to watch the kind of improvisation that I like to watch. So a lot of times I will start out like in a, you know, my first, let's say, level one class of Artist Low Comedy. It's like, I want you just to make a connection. I want you to go out there blank, and I want you to look at your partner and seeing what you're getting organically off your partner. So right now you're looking really, you know, like you're scrunching your eyes a little at me, and now you're nodding and whatever. So immediately we could be in a relationship,
mm-hmm.
right? You're low status because you're squinting your eyes.
Yeah.
Or, you know, what are you getting off emotionally? Like looking in their eyes, what are you getting off them emotionally, you know?
Yeah.
Do they look sad? Okay, great. They look sad. Great. So take that further. Now, how can you put it in the context of a scene? Sad. Okay. Your dog just died. Or we're just breaking up. Or, you know, mom, you know, we're brothers. Mom and dad is leaving. You
yeah.
know, so it can go anywhere. But it's a lot of times people are so they really want to get the verbal, and there's nothing worse than watching people trying to be funny.
Yeah, totally. That's interesting. So you're big on connection.
I'm big on what's going on between your partner, making that emotional connection.
Is that TJ and Dave style kind of thing?
You know, I would say it is, yeah. You know, if yes. Okay. Yeah.
Fair enough. So then, oh yeah, well, let's get into it. So art is slow comedy then, it sounds like ultimately you're emphasizing, like, and I'm guessing here, so tell me if I'm wrong, emphasizing the understated stuff, not so much focusing on the funny words or the
yeah, comebacks. It's making that connection first,
yeah,
and then the emotional, have an emotional reaction about something, and then the words will come, and then the game will come. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really, for me, it's like I want to see people, and maybe it's my style, or maybe it's because, you know, I studied with Del Close, and he was always a big a proponent of slow comedy. You know, what we're doing here is slow comedy. But I want to see people that are real and grounded on stage.
Yeah.
I don't want to see people running around with that frenetic energy, pulling lobsters out of their butt. I don't find that funny, you know?
It's interesting. So we talked about, like, a kind of at the top of the scenes, finding what's going on, inferring stuff, you know, mm-hmm. you look like this, so maybe this right. is going on. And then following that, and then, I mean, like, what other things are you, like, emphasizing, I guess, in your teaching of this?
Like building it together. Like, I think it's really important, you know, and this was reinforced. I did a workshop with Dave Koechner, you know, from Anchorman and The Office, and, you know, I wish I could take more classes or co-teach with more people, because you learn so much when you do that. And so the one thing is, like, you know, like, all you have to do, you know, is, this was according to Dave, is just work off the last thing that was said. And so I'm big on that. Slow down, build off the last thing. I'm also big on specifics. Add a specific to the scene, a detail, you know?
Yeah.
That's really, really, really important, I think, in this work.
Yeah, one of the ones you mentioned that I thought, or you asked what episodes I thought were good, Alex Friday, we'd had the whole episode of just, like, why specifics are the most important thing in the world. And I totally agree. I love that. So working off the last thing, building it together. So not a lot of premise-y stuff, probably.
Yeah, I don't. So. Occasionally, I'm okay with premise. You know, it's like, to me, it's like, and with my teaching, is like, my whole goal is to do less. I mean, because for the longest time, I wanted the students to have a breakthrough, right? I can't tell you how much pressure that is to put on yourself. Like, I want them to be like, oh, Jimmy's the teacher that I had a breakthrough with. It's like, well, that's ego, you know? And really, my job is teaching is to get out of your way, you know, because students are so in their own heads and so in their own way. Is my job is to try to find ways to free you up.
It's interesting. So I'll just play devil's advocate.
Please
for
do.
This one. So I think Besser would say something like, you know, why not do stuff like use initiations or use more premise stuff, because that is making it easier. That's like, I have something that's funny. Let's do that. And then we can build a little bit off of it mm-hmm. together, but we have something that's funny. Why not start there? Like, what's...
Well, I mean, I do, you know, eventually the students will do that. They'll make a strong initiation and go that way.
Yeah.
I just think, like, when starting out, I just want to strip them away. I want them just to, like, not worry about being the funny, worrying about being funny. It's about being a good actor.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I think, you know, like, when I started acting, because of Chicago, because of the history of Second City, it was, you know, actors started improvisation. So there was always this, like, feeling of, we kind of felt like we were stepchildren, because a lot of us didn't go take acting classes.
Yeah.
So we were kind of like, oh, you know, we're going to learn acting as we go along. But even with the teaching, you know, there was this like, it's acting. And I'm not a great actor by any means. You know, if you read one of my blogs, you know, my wife thinks I'm a bad actor. Probably it's really me who thinks I'm a bad actor. But I really like to see the acting element of it. And I think like learning slow comedy and learning just to strip it away and just existing on stage, then you can plug it in anywhere. It's going to work at UCB. It's going to work at the Annoyance style. It's going to work at, you know, IO style. It's going to work at Second City. But take the pressure off yourself. Be yourself on stage first and foremost. Yeah. And get comfortable on stage and get comfortable with the, you know, I do a lot of silent stuff the first couple of classes. Get comfortable with that stuff. That's only going to help you with your stage presence.
Yeah. I think it's interesting how much you can get away with that's either funny or not funny, or like just being able to make it look like, yeah, I intended to do that and I'm not worried about it or stressed about it. I think that's like the biggest downfall of people attempting to be funny or trying to work as funny. Mm-hmm. Is like if it doesn't work, they like, oh no, like I don't have anything now.
Right. Or they'll go into an institution and they'll be like, the institution doesn't fit for them. You know, it's like, my style isn't for everybody. UCB style isn't for everybody. Annoyance style isn't for everybody. You know, it's like, you will find that place that you're really, really comfortable with, and that will help you with your voice. But I think I've seen so many students, you know, in Chicago, oh, I got cut from the IO. Oh, I didn't make it to the touring company at Second City. And it's like, people... improvisation, and I think we say it in our book, is like improvisation in performing is much bigger than any of the institutions combined.
Yeah. You do say that in there. I think that's one of the last chapters. Improvising Better. It's available on Amazon. It's really good. I really like that book.
Thank you.
Crap. Lost the thought. Let me see if I can get
that. That's right. We can just edit this part out, right?
No,
we go straight through.
I don't edit.
You are totally professional. Very, you know. It's really good.
Okay.
Yeah.
By not editing?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like brave.
Yeah.
We do a little editing.
It's lazy. I don't have time.
Okay.
That's what it comes down to.
Will this be on in like 10 minutes after we're done?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'll probably put this up 2 weeks, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Long after you're gone. I can figure out what I remember. I've got to remember
great.
What I was going to say.
I was kind of stalling for you there.
I could tell.
That, yeah.
See, here's my
That's
true
my radio break. On
my true panic. Yeah, yeah. My true panic is right now that I will forget what I was going to say in your stalling after me remembering again. Isn't
okay, because I thought you were having problems with you have questions on the computer?
Yeah, I have a few like notes of things that, like maybe we'll talk about this.
Okay.
But
now do you prepare at all for your show?
Yeah. I usually usually the day of I double check the book and see if anything comes off that.
Okay.
I do a quick Google and see if there's anything.
You didn't
I
do a credit
do.
Check, did you?
A credit check, no.
Okay, great.
On IMDb actually, yeah, I think I
no,
saw.
No, I mean like for like
credit score.
Yeah. Okay.
That makes much more sense. Jimmy, my fear happened and that I totally forgot what I was gonna say. A character. That's it. Okay, so character stuff. So I feel like right now what I'm getting a lot of in my learning of improv is a lot of like, hey man, you got to get in characters. You got to do character, which is interesting because it sounds like you were just saying like, yeah, you got to learn, be comfortable being yourself. And I feel like when I listen to you on Improv Nerd, when you guys do the improv sets, I'm like, that's pretty much Jimmy.
Yeah.
He's not like a character guy.
That's correct.
Let's just chat about being yourself then.
Okay. So you're struggling with character. Is that it?
Yeah. I think I get a lot of, like I've been going through the Miles thing right now. He's like, yeah, you're funny. And like, you can do funny stuff and you're fun. But like when you get somebody an initiation where you get labeled as a thing, you got to become that thing. You
like, give me an example so we can talk about this.
Well, like once I got called an idiot at the top of the scene.
Okay.
And he's like, yeah, I got to play an idiot. So I was playing an idiot, but then like, 5 lines into it, I went to like, we can create a barter economy between the two of us. Like, an idiot doesn't know what that is. And I was just playing. I was disguising me being my smart, clever self with like a vague voice.
Okay.
That's what I mean.
Well, but was your first instinct, okay, so an idiot. So what was your first line or about that? Did you go into a like what you thought was a fake voice?
Yeah, I mean, I tried to like take it on a little bit and like get slouchy and whatever. I'm sure I did the Southern voice or whatever, something like that.
Okay, yeah. And what was wrong with that choice?
Nothing's wrong with that choice, but it's that it, like 5 lines in.
Well, you bailed on your
on
yourself.
I get clever,
right? You bailed on yourself. Why? Because you weren't getting laughs?
No, I feel like I'm too tempted to be. like smart. I think that's what it is. Like I feel like it made sense for me to say like we'll create a barter economy between the two of us, but it's also that doesn't make really sense for a dumb character to whip that out of nowhere. But I'm like, no, that's what's happening. Isn't that interesting? And I want to follow that.
Well, to me, that's like, okay, so your initial instinct was right. And sure. Your instinct was like, okay, I'm going to slouch. It's low status. It's a low status character. I'm going to change my voice a little because that's what came to my – and then like five or six lines. See, if you were in class, I'd be curious to know why you bailed on that character.
See, I don't think I bailed on the character. I bailed on the mindset. Does that make sense?
We're talking about the same thing.
Yeah, we're talking about the same thing for sure. Because
I love when – you know, I believe improvisation – we're all going for the same thing. It doesn't matter if it's UCB, Annoyance, Second City. We're all going for the same thing.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
So getting back to your...
Yeah. So
were you afraid?
No.
Were you self-conscious?
No. I was excited that that's what was happening between us, is that we could create a barter system economy between the two of us. Like, that was... I was excited to say what that was, because I'm like, I know what this is. Like, I felt like it's like me wanting to say, I'm smart, I get it, or this is a joke that fits in, is a lot of, like, what happens when I bail on characters. I'm like, oh, this is... I have something here to make this funny. You know what I mean? And I can continue laughs in character. I do that, I think, fairly regularly. But when I see something that I'm like, I gotta say this, like I don't have a lot. I'm very good at going like, I need to say this, and then kind of selling out the character.
Does Miles ever talk about, and this was a Dell concept, where, you know, you don't say the first thing that comes to your mind?
He's never said that, but I've heard of that before.
Okay. Well,
is funny because it sounds the exact opposite of plenty of improv wisdom of like playing from the gut and don't think and all that stuff. You're like, well,
Dell always believed the first choice was the obvious choice. And everyone knows who Dell Close is, right?
Everybody who listens to the show knows who Dell Close is. Yeah.
And if you don't,
I don't know, there's
a couple books. just Google Dell Close.
Yeah.
He worked with everybody.
Miles says he's basically the inventor of long form improv, and I feel like that's not a fair. That's not an unfair assessment.
No, but the UCB. I feel like this show is tangent, but I don't care because I'm comfortable with you.
Hey, let's get
into it. And we'll go back to what this point I was going to make. Dell Close, to me, like the UCB were really influenced by him. Matt Besser in particular, I think.
Yeah.
And they had a really great experience at the I.O. because he directed a show for them. Not everybody had the same experience with Dell. Dell was like, taking Dell was like being in a big Irish Catholic family. If you had 10 kids, the oldest had a different experience than the youngest.
Okay.
And it's interesting because Dave Pasquese of the, you know, legendary TJ and Dave loves Dell, thinks he's the greatest. TJ, on the other hand, you get the sense, didn't get much from him.
Yeah.
Which I think is really interesting. And what I think Dell was a genius at, was he inspired people to believe that this was an art form.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Besser and the UCB, they carried that to New York. And I think the whole boom of long form is because of Dell. He believed, he made these people in Chicago back in the late 80s, early 90s, after he had done his tour at Second City, to believe that this was something valuable. This was an art form into itself.
Yeah.
And when you say it was an art form, people are like, well, what does that mean? What is an art form? That sounds really pretentious. I think what he meant was that this thing stands, this could go up against, you know, a scripted show, a sketch show.
Absolutely.
You know, and Dell and Bernie Sollins used to have this long-running feud. Bernie Sollins was one of the co-founders of Second City. And they had this long-running feud. You know, Dell thought it was an art form. Bernie, of course, thought it was
a way to generate scripted material.
Yeah, it was just a tool.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was the dumbest argument because both of them are right.
Yeah.
You know. So getting back to Dell, so if you had to skip forward to get to this part, I don't care. so his theory was you had three. Your first thought was always the most obvious. Mm-hmm. The second thought was a little less obvious, and the third choice was always the most had the most juice. Was the, you know, now I've taught that in my classes at the Artist Low Comedy. And it may be because I'm older. I found that the second and third choice usually works.
Yeah.
But the first one is usually a very obvious choice.
Sure.
You know? Now, in your case, with getting back to your character thing,
sure.
I would probably think with you, and here's the other thing about improvisation. It is not a one-size-fits-all. So if you have 8 people or 10 people or 15 people in a class, everybody's learning at a different rate. Everybody's, you know, trying to work on something different. Now, each class will have its own themes of, like, what they need to work on. Like, maybe it'll be a class that really everybody needs to agree, or no one's making positive choices, or nobody's heightening stuff, or no one's finding the games, whatever it is. In your choice, I would say probably go with the first thing when it comes to a character thing, because... and stay in that character,
yeah.
even if you're not getting laughs. And I'd probably say to you, look at it like an acting class.
Yeah.
Don't worry about getting laughs.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I think people now go to improv a lot because I think it's known. Like, I feel like people go to improv because they're funny. And also probably out of laziness too. So I feel like it brings a certain type of lazy persons. But like what happens is I think self-diagnosis a little bit. One is like, oh, I think I'm funny and I think I have something funny to say and I'm going to say it. And that will allow me to plenty of times divert away from character, like a normal character.
Well, and I think we say this in the book Improvising Better. It's like, do you want to... And I think this is it's just rookie kind of stuff. Is like, totally. Do you want to learn the craft or do you want to be funny? They're
sure.
two separate things. You know, and if you want to learn the craft on the way, you mm-hmm. may have to have a couple classes and a couple shows that you're not funny in because
yeah.
you're just there to make mistakes and you can't get better unless you make mistakes.
For sure. It's totally right. And I agree, and I'm working on that constantly. Like that's my thing. It's like
I'm not shaming you, am I?
No, no, no.
Do you feel self-conscious?
No, no. Okay. No, it's okay. I'm thinking a little bit how I wanted to talk about improvising as yourself, but that's okay because we'll get there. I think you're totally right, and I think it's hard. Like it is hard to go. Like I know that I'm funny, and like. That barter system joke, as much as it was a joke, still got a laugh. And it's like, well, you know, it's tough. It's one of those things where I think you say that in the book. Like, if you're being funny or, like, being, like, clever or, like, throwing off lines and not acting is negatively reinforced because you'll get a laugh for it, but you're not doing the art of it. And that's
right.
And it's tough. I think that's a tough line to walk, especially if you're a person like myself with an ego who believes that he's funny.
Well, you are funny.
Yeah, no.
You know, but and that's the hardest thing is like, you know, you do, you know, 10 bad shows or whatever, you know, have a couple, you know, you have bad classes. It's hard to like, because I'm the most insecure person in the world. And when I started and I think I had this blog recently, you can check it out at jimmycrane.com. It's okay to plug, isn't it?
Please do.
Okay.
Every 3 minutes.
About having a bad show and I got just great response. The blog piece was how I felt after a bad show. And my wife was the one who suggested, write about your bad show. And mm-hmm. I want to kill myself. And I'm not exaggerating. I want to kill myself.
Sure.
And I've been doing this for, you know, a long time.
Yeah.
I want to, you know, I have suicidal thoughts when I have a bad show. And I got response from people like, I could totally relate to what you had to say because I feel the same thing after a bad show too.
Yeah.
Jimmy, please, whatever you do, don't kill yourself. You know?
Yeah. That's funny. I totally get that. I once did a really bad show and I felt awful and I was like with my friend. I'm like, let's go see a movie or something. Like, I got to get out of here. And we saw The Gray. Do you see that one with
no.
Liam Neeson? It's a bummer. We'll say that. And I was like, this isn't fucking helping. Like, I just remember going like, thanks for making me watch. I was mad at her. I was mad at everybody. The whole world was like, I'm like, I gotta give up. I gotta like Liam Neeson at the end of The Gray, spoiler alert, just die. Like, that's what I was hoping for, is a wolf to eat me. Cause I was so bad.
And my therapist would say, who wanted to die? Meaning like, did you want to die? Yeah.
Yeah. What? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's your, I think you're,
I mean,
you're
in people, pardon?
I think you might be overpaying your therapist
yeah.
just for that
yeah.
can bounce back.
Yeah.
You, right.
Yeah.
Therapist.
Well, can I say something about therapy in
Please.
Terms of like, people are so like, I like it when on Improv Nerd, people reveal their insecurities.
Sure.
Because to me, I didn't have that coming up, you know? I didn't have people say, you know what? When I have a bad show, I feel like dying. Or you know what? There was a great episode we had Koechner on. And Koechner was a friend of mine, certainly in Chicago. But he tells this story where when they were doing Anchorman, they would all go home to their wives and they'd say, Steve Carell's stealing the movie. And Will Ferrell would go home and say, Dave Koechner's stealing the movie. And Paul Rudd would go home and say, you know, whoever was stealing the movie. And they all thought that the other person was stealing the movie. And then they met in a trailer and they admitted it to each other. You know, like Will Ferrell said, you know, I thought you were stealing the movie and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, this is what I'm after. This is what I'm after. People sharing their process. But more than that, people sharing their insecurity.
Yeah.
Because I don't care who you are. You're insecure, you know? And I want to know how people overcome that insecurity because that's what I struggle with. And, you know, here we are, these insecure people. And then on the other hand, we're going on stage doing the hardest thing. We're going on stage with no lines, totally naked, like emotionally. It's like, talk about like a firing squad. I mean, it's the most vulnerable, scary thing in the world. Yet, yeah. When we get off stage, you know, some of these improvisers, is pot still a big drug of choice for the improviser?
I would assume it is.
Yeah. Pot, or they'll go and drink and, you know, get drunk and forget about it. But yeah. It's a very vulnerable thing. But,
yeah.
You know, that's what I'm after. I want to know your process. I want to know what, you know, why you decided to bail on that, you know, character five lines into it.
That's interesting.
You know?
Yeah. I'm totally for that because I think I know what you mean. Like it's we're in a slightly different age too, where people don't seem as bulletproof and like being truthful. I feel like is becoming more and more like welcome. You know what I mean? Like I you know, the obvious thing is like Louis C.K. is like he takes like weird dark things that are going on and like that's what it is. Yeah. Can you believe it?
Well, when we started out in the Improv Olympic, one of the things that Del was in, you know, truth in comedy.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I loved doing was we used to do monologues, which if you've seen ASCAT or Armando, you know, the monologist goes out and really just he's telling an honest story. And those were we used to do like monologues in Harold's as openings. Two, three, four people would come out and do a monologue. That was our opening. And then we would go into the first set of scenes that I think is a little lost. And I think they probably still teach it there at IO. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem to I really like that. And that's the one thing I took away from studying with Del was that honesty, that you could go up and talk about anything, you know, and get a laugh.
Yeah.
If it was truthful from your life.
Yeah. There's one of this young UCB LA Herald performer who's on the show, he said something, I think it was very smart. He was like, I think if you're 100% unfiltered in what you say and not just like, I'll say anything crazy, but just 100% honest in what comes out and not trying to shift it. At the core of all of us, there's something funny going on. It's just funny because there's all kinds of weird insecurities or odd thought processes or just ways to get stuff. That's just like, what? There's like a nice little laugh and everything. And yeah, if you can tap into that and like not, and allow yourself to be unfiltered and vulnerable and not trying to be like, I'm cool or I'm smart or I'm funny. And just go like, yeah, man, I did this thing. And like, it wasn't the coolest and people laugh. And that, yeah, that's totally.
And I have found the things that cause the most shame in my life are the things that become the best monologues or the best, you know, the best things to talk about.
Totally. Yeah, totally.
But at the time you're like, I want to die. This is awful. You know?
Yeah. I feel like monologues, whenever that happens, I'm like, oh God, here we go. Okay. Just say this line, tell them what happened. All right, cool. They're being okay with it. But I this next line is going to be worse in the story. Oh, cool. They're still fine. Like, and that's, it's tough to like put yourself there, but you should, bring it out there. Why not?
I think that whole monologues and honesty and stuff, I think that started to it would have an impact on the work. It would influence the work.
Yeah.
You know?
In what way?
I think again, it would. I think if you slow stuff down a little, you're gonna find more honesty. And I think it was in the air. It was in the air.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about slowing down. I think. So I'm gonna do again devil's advocate on this one. I think.
Please
that,
do.
Miles Stroth would say you would not. You don't have to play slow. You can play fast, but you have to do it accurate.
He's absolutely right.
Great.
You know, well, like in slow comedy, people after a while, sometimes I will see people just playing slow for slow's sake. If you're connected, you can go as fast as you want. But what I'm doing is I'm slowing you down, and I'm teaching you, or hopefully you're teaching yourself, because I don't want to do that much work anymore. Slowing people down so they can make that connection. And once that connection's there, you can get it done in a couple seconds at the top of the scene. And then you can go as fast as you want. You can play game. You can play whatever you want.
Yeah.
But learn it, you know?
Yeah, that's totally...
Well, Miles the thing I always respected about Miles was his approach was like math. You know, he comes from this like formulaic approach, which, you know, is amazing and it works. And,
Yeah. You
know, and the other thing is like he's built up this great school here, which is wonderful.
Yeah. He's got a whole positions thing, which is interesting because you wouldn't think anybody was so.
Because I don't understand. I understand it. But sometimes there's room for everybody. You know, why is it like, the UCB style. It's not like Chicago or it's not like New York or, you know, what is all that?
I feel like that's a very... amateur view of it. Like I really feel like if you're branding yourself as I am a this performer, then like you're not getting it yet. Because there's a lot of ways. There's so like in the infinite possibilities that is improv and the infinite largeness that we're talking about before. If there's more than just that one stage or even all the stages combined, and the infinite all of that, then you should be. Understanding that the type of approach to there's not probably a unilateral approach to every scene, and then and there's people who have been thinking about this and trying and honing their processes. You could learn so much from if you could steal all everybody's knowledge, that'd be great. It'd be so much better than stealing the institutional knowledge of one place. So why not like open yourself up to
right I'm agreeing with you 100%, and it's your process. So
yeah.
Own your process.
Yeah,
you know, because what works for one person is not going to work for everybody.
Right.
You know, and what I teach, you may after 6 weeks go, you know what, Jimmy Crane is full of shit.
Yeah.
But you may glean one or two things that work, you know. And I think sometimes what's just frustrating in teaching is people will say, well, you know, we're trying this, you know, it's not working or whatever. Then, you know what, if it's not working, throw it out.
Right.
You know, I am not a guru. I'm not, you know, I've been doing this. I teach what I like, but I don't have all the answers, you know. And what I've learned is, you know, more than ever, is that class. I let the class say, okay, what did you see? What do you think? Because a lot of the times I don't have the answer. And I think it's dangerous when you're teaching this and you think you have all the answers.
Right. Well, I think that, and you know, also to go back just a step on that is becoming an artist. Like if you're I feel like everybody who's not treating improv as an art is doing this wrong. I don't know if that's a thing, but it is an art. And being an artist, any artist, you copy and you steal people's ways of doing it for a while, and you can't succeed 100% at being whichever improviser you want to be. Like, I'm trying to be Craig Kakowski 100% of the time, and I can't be Craig Kakowski. He's the best Craig Kakowski in the world. So in my failing of becoming Craig Kakowski, I will become Steven Pearlstein. And that is a valid artist in himself. And, like, that is something that's fine. Like, try to take different perspectives. Try to take it all in, and then let that become your way of doing it. And then, you know, and then start a class called The Artist Low Comedy. I have a blog. Check it.
But you're absolutely right. What you're doing, and you know, like what this podcast is like really helpful is like it's helping people with the process, and you just sharing that is like not everybody is, you know, that conscious of it. That, okay, you know what? And I was the same way. I think I wanted to be, Dave Pasquazi. Yeah. Because everybody looked up to Dave Pasquazi when I was starting up. So, everybody, but after a while, Dave Pasquazi doesn't work for Jimmy Crane. And Jimmy Crane gets more and more comfortable on stage.
Yeah.
And he finds his voice. That's the process,
Yeah. And that's 100% the process for any artist. If you look into it, you'll find that artists throughout history, music, TV, writers, painters, they all were like, I'm trying to do something like somebody else, and I could do it, but I started doing my own thing. That's pretty interesting. And then all of a sudden, they're Mozart.
But the thing you said is like, but that gives you the confidence to get up on stage.
Totally.
Yeah.
I still every now and again in scenes, I find myself basically doing an impression of how somebody else would improvise a scene.
I will have students in class and go like, oh, okay, I see. They go to TJ and Dave a lot,
Yeah.
Or, oh, okay, great. They go to the main stage, Second City. I can see it.
That's what they're going. That's funny. Yeah, I love it. Okay, well, let's just talk about students. I don't know. I'm always really interested from more veteran teachers. What's that maybe a trend or something that you noticed or something that you're maybe didn't notice in your improv before? Like, is there something going on now that like, oh, people are doing this a lot, or like we're working on this a lot, or new things are happening here? It's a pretty open-ended question.
It is an open-ended question. I think one of the things that I would like to see more of is when we were starting out, and I don't know in L.A., so you could help people. We were at the I.O. and we would go and we'd see shows at the I.O.
Yeah.
Okay. So we would see what was happening. And today, what's happening is people are doing 20 different things. They're, in three classes. They've got, two shows they're doing. They're doing a bar prop. It's just crazy. So the chances of the UCB happening again, or a Jazz Freddy happening again, or some sort of movement happening again, that's, I find, a little discouraging with students. They are way over committing themselves.
That's 100% still a thing. There was a time when I was in 8 weekly practice groups, and I remember taking a nap in between one of my practice groups in my car for like 10 minutes and going, one day I'm going to die and not have to deal with any of this. And it was a weird thought.
But that's not, that thought to me is like, that's a red flag. It's like,
it was.
I'm supposed to be having fun at
and
this.
And I brought it down.
When I direct or when I teach, I can see it in their eyes. It's like they have nothing more to give.
Yeah.
And if I was to say anything, it's like, if you're taking classes, take two, I'm not even going to put a number because everybody's different. But make sure that you have a life.
Yeah.
Because you can't, I don't want to see the roommate scene over and over again. I don't want to see, stuff that you're only pulling from your improv, because you've been to 20 improv rehearsals that day. I want to see life.
Yeah.
And that's, getting back to truth in comedy, it's like pulling stuff from your life, that pain from your life or that joy from your life, bringing that on stage, sharing that on stage with me.
Yeah. It's interesting because I've talked about this before, and it feels like in L.A., it sounds like it's a universal thing, and I don't see why it wouldn't be, is there's a lot of opportunities to do a lot of different things. And, I was doing teams like, oh, we're just doing Heralds, or we're just doing Pretty Flowers, or like, we just do Montage, and this is a group that's just like fun to do. And it's in that, like, where it's like, oh, there's a lot of opportunities and I want to try out new things and I want to learn from different cultures at the same time and all that opportunity. Sorry, my vacuum.
Is it one of those robotic vacuums?
Yeah, it's the best thing in the world.
Okay.
Everybody should have one.
How much are they?
I don't remember. I think that one was like $350, I want to say.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
It almost looks like a paper shredder, doesn't it? I mean, it's...
People tell me it looks like a Nintendo a lot, and I tend to agree.
Okay.
But in the lots of opportunities, it's easy to get caught up in that and be like, try to take it all in and get good. Like, oh, if I do more, I can get good. And I don't know that I don't know that I disagree with that entirely, but...
Well, I think there's a point. How long have you been doing it?
2.5 years.
Okay,
almost 3.
So there's a point where it's like, doing 10 different shows every week, you're not going to get any better.
Yeah.
at 2.5 years, I would think you'd probably be like, okay, we're gonna, okay, this is the best team I'm on. Let's commit. Let's go out and hire a coach. And maybe I'll have another team, and maybe I'll continue to take classes. But, and I'm not saying put all your eggs in one basket, but certainly put a focus on that team. You know, I interviewed a couple people. Jed Evelyn. I don't know.
She's out here in LA now.
Yeah, and from the Reckoning. And my God, you know, you listen to their process. Those guys were together for 12 years.
Yeah,
and they went and they in Chicago. They all took classes at the Annoyance, or took a class, I think, at the Annoyance. Well, that's unheard of, you know? Then they got some night at I.O. in Chicago where they would try experimental things, you know? And they and all those people, you know, have done really well. And I think probably they used that. They made that like, oh, this is going to be our training ground, you know? And so I would say to you, someone like you, it's like, okay, find the team that you're really having fun with. Is there a commitment? Now, you can't force that commitment. There could be people on that team. See, that's the hard thing.
That's the thing, is if there's 10 people, you know, or 8 people in a team who all have this thought of trying all these different things, so, oh, we want to commit to one, the syncing it up is...
You know, it's funny because I knew Matt Walsh from The Annoyance, and I just have to say that so people, it gives me street cred.
Yeah.
But... I interviewed him on Improv Nerd, and then I've interviewed him before, and he had said in an interview that at the UCB, when they left Chicago, would sit down every year, and they would re-up their commitment.
Yeah.
They'd say, okay, we're going to – and I believe Amy had gotten offers, you know, early on, and I think the rumor was she had gotten offered Saturday Night Live and turned it down. I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm sure they did get offers. But their thing was, we're going to stay together.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, eventually got 3 seasons on Comedy Central. The thing about that, when they did that, I was so happy, even though Besser will say, like, and it'll be interesting because I'm going to be interviewing him, but it'll be interesting. Besser said to me, you know, like, Jimmy, you don't think we should leave Chicago. And it probably was true, you know, but for me, it was a fear. You know,
yeah.
I'm still in Chicago. But when they hit it big, I was really happy. And I was happy because then they weren't an institution. You know, they were just building an institution. And I was so happy because I thought improvisers will learn from this. They will see what the UCB did by commitment, how great something happened, and they will follow suit. And there's some groups that do it out of Chicago. I think mm-hmm. Improv Shakespeare has done a really good job. There's a group called Cook County Social Club, which
I've heard of them. Yeah,
they're amazing.
The
and actually,
weren't they on the show?
They've been on the show,
yeah, okay,
and also that. Tim Robinson, who just went to Saturday Night Live this season from them. Oh. My wish for those guys is they would make a commitment, because I've never seen anybody play Harold the way they play it.
Yeah.
They play it, they break the fourth wall, they use their relationship, which to me is just like truth and comedy, honesty. They're fast players, they play emotionally. React emotionally. They're committed to stuff. They're great, you know. And I'd love, my wish is for those guys to you know, do what UCB did, because I think they could do it.
Yeah.
I think Improv Shakespeare out of Chicago, I don't know if you've heard of them. They tour all over the country. Blaine Swen is just, he's a great businessman. He's built this great product. It's a great, fun show. When you hear improv and Shakespeare, you're like, what? And, you know, they were on the show, and I did it with them, and they're freaking talented.
Yeah.
It's a great thing. And getting back to this thing, it's like, why doesn't more people commit to it? You know, why doesn't more groups? Because it's just, you know, you're more abreast. Why? What's going on?
Well, I mean, you know, it's. I think it's tough, because it's like, it's this weird, I think there's like a weird almost prisoner's dilemma part to it, where like, oh, maybe if I screw over a few of my teammates, I can get more for myself. And maybe there's this part of, there's a lot of opportunities, and there's a lot of, the like, I personally feel like I have to attack
comedy on a number of fronts for it to work in anything. And maybe that's my LA sensibility, like, oh, I need to get a job one day doing this. I need to be, I have, you know, I write my specs, and I also have a sketch team, and I also have a team that just does videos, and I have my improv team, and then I have my other improv team, you know, like,
well, then you got
like
to throw stand up in there, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, and honestly, yeah.
In a commercial audition class.
Yeah. And then I've been thinking about doing, I need to get some stand up on tape, because somebody kept on getting asked for it when I was doing this thing. And I was like, it would have been a cool job, but whatever. But yeah, and it's one of those things where, and then the podcast even, it's like, it does feel like there's a need to attack it on a number of fronts, and that that a single voice, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like only one iron on the fire. Is it going to get hot? I don't know. I've got nine. Maybe that'll help.
Well, and here's the reality of it too.
Please.
If you're going to get something, it's going to be because I believe you wrote it. Tina Fey wrote it. Tina Fey is a perfect example. You know, Tina Fey got hired for Saturday Night Live, and I believe Adam McKay, I don't think she was hired as an outright writer. She might have just gotten a short contract or something like that. She moves up the ladder. She becomes the head writer, and then, you know, but she wrote her way to the top.
Yeah.
You know, Nia Vardalos, who did, people probably don't even remember Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Oh yeah,
she was in Chicago, and she came out here and she did this show, My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Well, she wanted to get it on Aspen Comedy, the festival out there, and she modified it. That didn't happen. She kept doing the show, and eventually, you know, Rita Wilson got interested. But it took, she wrote, you know, she wrote. Mike Myers is the same thing. He was in Chicago for a time. He played with us on a team that I was on called Tequila Mockingbird. Myers was a writer. I mean, he certainly is a performer and whatever, but he wrote his way to the top.
Yeah.
So, you know, improv is only going to get you so far, you know, you know, I think it's really important, you know, to throw yourself in. But if you, the people that I've seen that have made it, you know, probably 80% of the people, there's always the Farleys who made it, or the Tim Meadows who don't. But you got to create something.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, your podcast, you know, in my podcast, that's creating something.
Yeah. No, it's, again, that's one of those things. It's like, oh, this is helping in whatever way it's helping. And that, you know, towards whatever that thing. But, yeah, you know, the cool thing about improv is it kind of disappears when it's done, but also that's the bummer about it. You're like, oh no, like I'm talented. Like, we have talented people, but like, people don't know about that. That existed in the theater one night for, you know, 100 people. So like, it's gone. It doesn't matter. And I think that's why people kind of get like in that, you know, broad spectrum.
Yeah, but yes. Yeah. I can see that, but it's like, you're in a sketch group. Well, you know, why not all commit I had a group on, they were talented people, Sat on Vacation. They were a sketch group, and some of them are out here. And I brought up the UCB thing, and they had never heard of it. You know, commit for a year.
Yeah.
You know, and they're all, it's just a talented group of people. You know, so I'm like, you're in a sketch group, you know, why not make a commitment to the sketch group and see what happens?
Totally. I don't know. I'm not going to do it, Jimmy. That's the weird thing. I'm not. Well, you know what I mean?
I appreciate your honesty.
Like, I can't do a single thing. I can't just make that a single focus. As much as there's a part of me that goes like, oh, I'm sure that's better. It's like, I can't. Like, I don't want to give up other stuff, and I don't want to do less. And I don't know that. And that's the other thing too, is motivations are different a lot in comedy, I feel like. Like people commitment levels and wanting to stick with it. Like I'm the guy, like in my sketch group, for example, I'm like, I'm writing stuff. Of course I'll have new stuff every meeting. And of course I'll have rewrites every meeting. And I'm like, I'll meet more. And then there are people who are like, I didn't really write anything this month. Like, whatever. And you know, like, I don't want to have to like try to drag people along, but I still really like everybody. So like, what do? I don't know. I'm hanging out. We're seeing what
well,
happens.
The other thing, the flip side of it too, and I felt like, oh, you know, I don't want to give advice or, and I, that was, I was,
kind no,
of,
no, no,
I was freaking out there actually.
No.
It felt a little shame, but
it's great.
It's what you're young. So it's like 25, you know, maybe in a couple of years you'll go, okay, this is what I really like to do. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I take breaks from improv all the time. I'm like, I'm tired of it. I don't want to do it. It's burning me out, you know. But I do it more for mental health now than to be discovered, you know, for Saturday Night Live. Because
right.
That, you know, that is not going to happen.
hey, you got to keep the dream alive.
Yeah. Yes. I still submit my stuff. I still, so you know, when the auditions come in town, I call Sharna. I say, can you get me an audition? I'm still trying to hold on to that. I have a hairpiece. It makes me look probably like early 40s, you know.
I love the idea of you calling Sharna. Come on, Sharna. Come on.
Right.
This year's my year. Right. I love it. All right. Well, you know what? We've actually done pretty good on time here. I feel like we covered a lot of stuff. Let's see. Yeah. Okay. Real quick. We don't have to do this real quick. Let's just do it as we were. It sounded like there was going to be a chapter in the book at one point about playing from the brain and playing from the gut. And it sounded like that sort of disappeared. Like there was, I read an article that was like a little preview of things that are going to be in the book. And then it's not exactly in the book. And it feels like maybe it got split up into different things. Well, maybe talk a little bit about that.
I don't remember it. All right. It probably, you know, might've been in the book. Where did you read that?
I don't know. It was like a preview of the book.
Yeah. We might've written that before the book came out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right. Well, whatever.
There was a chapter in the book, there was a couple chapters, I think. One was that I really, and we kind of talked about it, was about, you know, don't have too many expectations for improv. Meaning, just like we talked about, if you want to go somewhere with improv, you've got to write, you've got to create your own thing. And that, I remember that was in it. And I because I had seen all these people go and succeed because they had written stuff. Like, I think people think like, oh, Saturday Night Live comes, you know, and wants you to audition. Well, you can't just go in and say, give me a suggestion. You've got to come in with characters.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Jet Avalon auditioned like 3 times or something. The work that she put in for that is just amazing. And I remember when Koechner auditioned for it, I helped him, you know, with his audition. And I mean, there was work. I mean, it was like you had to script stuff for it, you know? So, and then people that get hired, like on Conan or Colbert Report, you know, they put these packets together, and I know our audience knows that, but there's work behind that. So
totally.
So that chapter was like, hey, people, you know, if you get it, you better be prepared to, you know, have writing samples. So if they come and see your show and say, hey, can you submit stuff?
Yeah.
You better have it.
Yeah, that's totally, totally important, and people don't do that enough.
Right. And, you know, it's funny because you're talking about your sketch group and you're like, yeah, I come in and I write and there's other people, you know, it's like, oh, I didn't get a chance to do it or, you know, and you're just like, okay, great. When you get the opportunity, you're going to have stuff written.
Yeah.
Or if you're given a deadline, you're going to know how to meet it.
Right.
While these other guys are, you know, down at the coffee bean getting high.
Yeah.
Do they get high at the coffee bean?
That's the only place to get high in town.
Okay, great.
Yeah, that's great.
I just wanted to, you know, throw a reference in there so people are like, ah, you know.
God,
Jimmy,
hip.
My God, it's, yeah. Chicago, LA now?
God,
yeah.
This guy's bi-coastal.
Yeah.
By mid-coastal.
Let's talk something that you brought up about the playing yourself thing that you're struggling
with. Yeah, I never got there.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thanks for bringing it back. It's good. You're listening.
Yeah. I teach it, and sometimes it actually is working in my life. I think if you get a point of view or an emotion or, like, you can play yourself, you're always playing aspects of yourself.
Yeah. That is a tricky thing, and it shouldn't be that hard, but it's like, yeah, it's just, instead of looking at through the lens, I feel like trying to look at characters is like, oh, I'm doing it through the lens of this, like, oh, I'm this, or like, I feel this way. And it's, you do it as yourself. It's like, oh, this is me as angry.
Okay. So here's my assessment of you.
Please.
Okay. Cause I do intuitive readings.
This is good. No, you sound like my ninth grade English teacher.
Really?
Yeah, he said he did intuitive. It's the exact same thing, swear to God.
Okay. Did you get a chill up the back of your spine?
No, I was just like, well, because he did it. It was a whole thing.
Okay.
He was a very dramatic ninth grade English teacher.
Okay. My guess is that you play very verbal.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. And based on what we talked about, that to throw yourself into a character or even an aspect of you being angry or you being frustrated or you being needy or you know, being in love scares the shit out of you.
No, I'm not often scared in doing things. It's not often fear. It's more often than not like,
I want to do that joke. I wanted to go for that fun. Like, I get distracted by shiny things, I think, as often.
A little attention deficit disorder?
Totally. We'll say okay. That. Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of my improv. And just like, well, what's that over there? That's right. The thing. Let's do that. That's fun. And then I'm like, oh, wait, I kind of changed. Yeah, I'm very much ADD on stage. Because there's so much fun stuff that happens. Like, you'll be doing, like, a perfectly funny thing, like you and me, and then somebody will, like, do this walk-on that's, like, it makes sense, but also there's an angle of it that you're like, we need to explore that now, because that just can't, like, I want to focus all on that, and I will give up everything I just did to go, like, what's going on here? Because there's just, yeah, I think of the nature of improv excites me, and that there's so much stuff going on. Potentially.
Yeah, sometimes when I see a walk-on, I just get annoyed. I'm like, you know, because if I see another scene where the waiter becomes part of the scene,
yeah,
it's just like...
Oh, yeah. But why is that because, waiter serving bologna bombs? Like, what are they? Can we talk about bologna bombs just for a minute?
Right.
Like, that excites me, always. I'm that guy. I'm the guy who ruins it. I'm the guy who lets the waiter become a part of the scene.
What do you think that's about for you?
I like it. I really do get, like, excited. It, good choices and bad choices alike. I'm like, are helpful or not, like that type of thing. I'm like, I want to know what that is. I want to talk about this now because that's now a part of my world. And I do, and I almost do feel like I justify it a little bit in my head. I'm like, but that's a totally reasonable thing because if this is ticklish in any reality, if somebody comes on and says or does something crazy or something gets brought up as an aside and, like, thrown away that is a glaring red flag in my head, then, like, I would talk about that. Like, I would like want to deconstruct what's going on in my life and go, like, what are you doing? And then once I figured it out, I would continue my conversation. I'm very tangential. Like, you know, flags come up. I want to talk about it.
Right.
Yeah.
But as a teacher, you know what is how I would learn from you? And that's the thing. Like, I like to learn from my students because it's boring if it's not. If I'm not being challenged. So what would be challenging to work with you would be, okay, how can I let you be Mr. Tangential Guy and put it in the context of slowing it down a little or playing, you know, heightening the scene or, you know, building the scene?
Yeah. I think it comes down, and when I get away with it, or when I manage to do this and it doesn't cause all the problems, is I feel like when I can successfully juggle or put the spotlight on the right thing, it's like okay, we're doing, like, we have a scene between us, and then, okay, this walk-on happened, that we're going to throw these balls really high in the air, and now we're going to just play with this for a little bit, and then as soon as, like, that has been explored, okay, we'll go back and, like, let's keep on doing our thing. But it is sort of, like, and hopefully not lose anything in that process.
I wonder, too, and I'm throwing this out, and you know, this is very therapeutic.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, for me. But I wonder, too, if that, like, I do this exercise, and actually, I learned it from Liz Allen, was we put people in a circle, and they would say, you know, tell me one thing you don't want me to know about you. Mm-hmm. Okay? And I would get, and then sometimes I would just ask the questions. I'd say, you know, what do you like about being an actor or an improviser? And people would say, I like the attention. And they'd say, what don't you like about being an actor or an improviser? The attention. And I'm just wondering, because I know deep down, deep, deep, deep down, I don't like the attention. I don't like the attention on this. It's a conflict.
Yeah.
There's part of me that really likes the attention, but there's part of me that wants to hide and be small.
Yeah.
All right. I'm wondering if when that comes in, you know, when the walk-in comes in, the waiter with the bologna bullets, that you, it's a good way of taking focus off you.
Yeah, maybe. That's totally a valid possibility. I don't know.
Like, it's almost a distraction. It's better to focus on the distraction than to focus on you or the scene that's going on between you and your partner.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. In certain scenes, I think if you're not feeling particularly funny or interesting, it's very easy to go, like, I don't know, let's do something else.
Or let them carry the ball, you know?
Yeah.
I'm failing here, so let them carry the ball, which is, of course, just made up in our heads.
Sure. It's a large part of it is people bring in weird stuff. And, like, that's always, like, the fun, like... doing improv a lot reminds me of, like, joking with my friends in college and how we'd be riffing on a thing and just laughing and joking. And then, like, you know, what Hugo brings up this thing, we talk about it for a minute, and then Connor brings up this thing. Oh, wait, what? Let's, like, it's, I really, like to take that focus around and, like, build on everything. Like, I don't know. Because I want to build on everything. I really do like to talk about everything. I try not to let stuff go. I'm really trying to not to let stuff go. I don't know.
But do your teachers say, like, you're not, like, you'll see something and you won't follow through, or you won't heighten it to a certain...
I'll get distracted. More often than not, it's like you got distracted. You guys, mm-hmm. you're doing this thing, and then this thing happened, and you guys just went after that and never got back to what your scene was starting about. Because, yeah, I'll just go, like, oh, what is the story keeper? Why is it this weird, like, short witch person? What is the purpose of the story keeper? Like, and, you know, follow that 9 steps in. And then it's like, okay, wait, what was our scene even about now? We lost it, you know?
Well, that's interesting, because you come from the UCB school where it's all about, you know, really writing on your feet, finding the game quickly.
Yeah.
How did you do over there?
I did fine. I think I think there's a little bit of a slightly different LA culture, because there's a few teams that sort of are known for that type of thing in a way, of known for being a little bit tangential or following flights of fancy more often than not. Like Herald teams, and maybe some more like weekend, like ASCAD is very, you know, game thing, but yeah.
So this tangential thing, is it a generational thing, or is it more of a style thing?
I would say, so, like, there's this team out here, Shitty Jobs, who, I don't know if you know them, they're pretty good. They come from New York, a lot of them. And they have this thing where they play fast, and they do very much chasing on the shiny thing all the time. They're insane. They're really good, though. And I think I see a lot of people out in L.A. trying to do a version of them. A lot of times it's very bad. So I do feel like there is a part of it that's a generational thing, that, like, literally, they've only been here maybe 3 years, and that's, I think there's a group of people who I watch trying to do that exact same thing. But again, I don't know if that's me doing them, or if that's me, or if that's a generational thing, or if it's just like, I don't know, like, I want to talk about stuff. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know.
We'll never know. I can't diagnose myself.
Yeah.
Come on. I'm not that smart. Jimmy. I got a question. I got a user submit question. I got to ask it, or else I'll feel bad.
Okay.
This guy, Otto, which is a very funny name to me, asked, what's the most important thing you learned while on Judge Freddy?
I feel almost repetitive because we've been saying this. I think it's commitment. And the thing about Jazz Freddy that made that show work was the commitment. And we would rehearse 3 nights a week. We treated it like you were cast in a play. Mm-hmm. So if you get cast in a play, you get 6 weeks of rehearsal and you put the show up. We had three rehearsals every week. And Dave Koechner, who was on the team, I feel like I'm name dropping, but Dave Koechner was on the team, and there was the second run of Jazz Freddy. I think it was Rachel Dratch or Brian Stacker, both of them, had gotten hired by Second City, and a touring company. And Dave had said it, and we brought it. Dave is a very strong personality. He's kind of a de facto leader. And we all agreed that you had to either make the commitment or, you know, you couldn't do the show. And, you know, years later, I talked to him about it. He said, oh, I thought we were really rough or whatever. And I'm thinking, no, that was a message that was sent, that we're taking this seriously.
Yeah.
You know, and so that commitment was one of the most things that I learned from Jazz Freddy. And since then, when I've worked with teams, it's been harder and harder to say, hey, you know, if you really want to be good, we're going to have to rehearse, you know, three nights a week.
Yeah.
So, you know, the older I get and the younger the generation, I'm just like, okay, if we can get one rehearsal in, that'd be great.
Yeah.
You know, a week.
It's interesting because I was just thinking about when I said that. It's improv. You do improv a lot, I think, with your friends, you know? Like, I do improv almost exclusively with my friends. Uh-huh. I only want to... And it's tough to, like... I think it's tough to treat it
like a business or a show, you know what I mean? And go like, we're going to rehearse three times or you can't do it. You know, like it's tough to do that. 'Cause like, these are your friends and you want to maintain that, and you don't want to, maybe that's part of it too, is like, maybe that's why everybody's low commitment, low, like, we got, well, I guess I have to do more projects, 'cause you can't, it's hard to get somebody to do three rehearsals a week. I've never heard of anybody doing three rehearsals a week in LA. I'm sure it's out there, but I don't know who it is.
What if you said to a group, you know what? For 6 weeks, we're going to do three rehearsals a week, or even two rehearsals a week. We're going to do six shows. We're going to put them up, you know, wherever you put them up.
Yeah.
And you know, after that, we'll evaluate evaluate where we are, or we'll see, you know, what that process is. But nobody even gives themselves a chance to do that.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's tough. I think it's tough going to your friends and going, I guys, I don't want you to commit to this.
And the other thing that I've noticed too, in you know, in the whole improv stuff, it's like, you know, the Annoyance Theater, which, you know, Mick Napier, I think, is just a comedy genius, an improv genius.
Yeah.
He, you know, his book, what is it?
Improvise the Scene from the Inside Out.
Yeah, it's a great book. So definitely pick it up. Yeah. But I was part of that, the original group, you know, not the original, but that theater was created because they weren't getting their needs met. They weren't getting their, you know, they had been done doing stuff at I.O. Second City wouldn't hire most of the people at that time. And the name we got was the Island of Misfit Toys. And people threw their heart and soul into that theater.
Yeah.
When I was there my God, it was in the 90s, really early 90s. And a lot of great things came out of that. The Real Life Brady Bunch, you know, Andy Richter's career, you know, was launched there. Beth Cahill was on Saturday Night Live. Melanie Hutzel was on Saturday Night Live in a very short period of time. But what doesn't happen now is there's so many, everybody's happy right now. There's like this almost like, it seems like there's almost like this, like, the last time people weren't happy, it seems like, was when Ali and Armando left UCB, they started Pitt, and then Armando leaves to start Magnet.
Yeah.
That's how these communities, a couple resentments can go a long way.
Yeah.
Or your creative vision isn't being fulfilled. I would like to see more of that stuff. People going, hey, you know, it's not working here, or, you know, it doesn't even have to be it's not working here. It's just like, you know, we've done what we can here. Let's start our own thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if that just comes with there's a lot out, you know, there's a lot of
stuff
around.
That's the thing. And that's why, you know, the whole problem of like people overcommitting, I always look at it as like a lateral move. You know, like in Chicago, you can be performing at I.O., you can be performing at The Annoyance. There's a place called The Playground. There's comedy sports. I mean, you can be doing shows in Chicago, you know, seven nights a week and probably one or two shows, you know, but all of that is lateral. Those are lateral moves. So if you say to yourself, well, I'm going to do improv, but I'm also going to do this sketch group and we're going to treat it like a show. Now it'll be interesting to see what would happen.
Yeah.
But I mean, everybody's pretty complacent right now.
Yeah. That's an interesting thought. I haven't thought of it like that before.
I mean, that's where the movements come, when people are dissatisfied. Like, I want to express myself and I can't.
Yeah. Well, but you got Miles.
I think Miles is great because Miles is living what it is. He does Tuesday nights. He does a free improv, right,
yeah,
for the independent teams.
Yeah.
And then he's teaching like six classes. He's, you know, he's got a ton of teachers. I mean, that's the spirit. But I think that's like Chicago, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, here's the other thing. People need to, if you're inside the institution, if you haven't gone out and tried to produce your own show, you're not going to appreciate what the institution is doing for you.
Yeah.
You show up at UCB and the house is filled, right, for most of the shows?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You don't have to do any work.
Yeah.
Well, they're doing a lot of work. You know?
Yeah. It's people rarely understand that. And that whole recent argument about the paying the performers thing, it's like, oh, you don't understand. You don't understand that at all.
What's your feeling on that?
I don't need to get paid. I don't I'm very happy to do comedy. If I do it at UCB where I have an audience, like the work it takes to get an audience in, you know, the flyers, like probably for every 40 flyers I get out, I'll get one person in. You know what I mean? For every 40 Facebook invites, I get maybe one person in. Like, it's work. It's so much work to do that. And if you can go to UCB and get people to come see you, wow, well, that's great. Like, you saved a lot of time for me. You got an audience to try stuff out on. And the thing is, if you can get paid to do it elsewhere, go for it. And if you don't want to do it for free, you don't have to. Nobody's making you. But, like, if you're, like, a committed comedic performer who's like, oh, I want to get some time and, like, learn some stuff. You learn from an audience constantly. If you want to do, like, I want to take some time and learn from an audience, great, do it. Free. Good. Good for you. If you don't want to, that's fine.
Well, especially in L.A., I remember years ago, there's no money in doing it here, right?
Yeah. Not. I don't know. I don't know if anybody's getting really paid. I mean, the paying improv jobs in the world, you know, there's like four. And they're not, you know, and actually doing improv, not coaching improv,
right.
Not teaching. Like, there's the paying improv jobs in the world. There's almost none. None of them pay well. Let's all relax. Just enjoy doing this thing that we do and know that it's about, to me, doing improv is all about getting that comedic voice more and more honed every time.
Here's my feeling on the pay thing.
Yeah.
First of all, each market is different, you know?
Totally.
And I think they were doing fine until stand-ups wanted to get paid. Isn't that what?
Yeah, it was okay. A stand-up thing,
which is a different culture. So
exactly.
I think, but I think that anybody who wants to get paid doing it, I totally support it. And if that means you have to go to those guys and ask to get paid, and they say no, you've asked. All
yeah.
right. And just like you said, you know what the rules are there. You know, and the other thing is, it's worked for them. That and. If I was out here, I would rather be playing to a full house than be playing to 10 people and getting $20
yeah.
if I was here. Again, I think people should get paid for this. And the other thing I think is with them is their business model worked.
Right.
Why do they have to defend it? You know, I didn't hear Matt's podcast, but someone told me that him and Ian got on there and they had the books open and they said, you know, and then the New York Times article, we don't make any money at this. To me, I want them to, I would like, you know, for me, is they created something.
Yeah.
They can create all the rules that they want that's worked for them. I want to know that they are making money at that. For me.
Yeah.
Because they showed other groups how to do it. They can show... They're a business model. And
yeah.
I think the thing that you're talking about friends, and we don't want people, you know... Friends, we don't really want to treat it like a business because whatever.
Sure.
I think a little of that is slipped in with them, you know? Why do you have to defend it? What you know?
Yeah.
You're doing it. It's work.
Yeah.
UCB on people's resume is like gold.
They've created an important comedy institution right now, you know, in the culture right now. An important comedy. It's very comfortable saying that. So, like, yeah, I guess you guys can have problems with it. Everybody can have a problem with it. But it's like, I don't know. It's hard to argue with success and it working out and, you know, good people coming from it. And people, you know, a lot of their improvisers, I don't know any improviser. And maybe they're out there who came from UCB who's like, you know, yeah, right. They did screw me over, and I wish they had paid me. People like what they've been through there. So, you know, I don't get it.
Well, I think it stemmed from the whole stand-up thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the whole stand-up thing.
Now, I think they're going to have to address that because that's a different culture.
I think they came up with
in the article it said like a couple drinks or whatever.
Drinks, and then they're doing the tour stuff and showcases.
But, yeah, so, but here's the other thing. If that's the case, if that leads to money for those stand-ups,
yeah.
then they're gonna find what the trade-off is.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing is, what level are you at? You know, like for someone like you just starting out, why quibble? Why get into that argument of I'm getting paid, I'm not getting paid? I mean, I think there's a quote in the book. Miles says like it took him 5 years to stop sucking.
Yeah,
it's like. If you have packed houses, you're going to, like you said, you're going to learn a lot faster
yeah.
from an audience than going flyering.
Yeah. I mean, Harold Knight, I think it's really strong in L.A., and UCB L.A., but I do also think that, like you can see, there are moments where you're like, oh, okay, you're getting something here. You're getting something from this. You're learning how to do this better. And good for them. And that should hopefully be the thing
for many years to come. I want that to continue forever, ever. Jimmy, we got it. Before my battery's going to die.
Oh,
my laptop.
God. Has that ever happened?
It's never happened before. Okay. We've been going for an hour and 20, if you can believe it. So let's do the last segment.
Okay.
Pearls of Wisdom segment. Usually this is a note or advice that you receive that you felt had a great impact on you. But also if you have a note, piece of advice that you give out in improv that you feel is particularly important, what would that be?
For me, it comes down to... when you're on stage, and I'm saying this and I need to learn this for myself, you are enough. Plain and simple, you are enough.
Nice. I like it. It's short. It's concise. Good. Good. We could explore it more, but I want people to just soak that in.
That's good.
They're enough. And then is there anything, we've got enough to talk for a little bit more. Is there anything that you want to share? Do you want to talk about that you want to plug? Anything.
Yeah, I would love to talk about Improv Nerd. If you haven't checked it out, we're now on PharrellAudio.com.
Oh, you're on
Oh, I'm so excited. You know? But, yes, we're on... So check that out. We've got some great... You're on podcast. Do you know who the number one person... And I've interviewed Tim Meadows, Dave Koechner, Scott Adsit, Dave Pasquazi, Susan Messing, McNapier, Key and Peele. You know who the number one... Who gets the most hits of the guests?
Tell me.
TJ Jagodowski.
Oh, yeah. That's not entirely surprising. He's the one... I downloaded that one. I don't download them all, but yeah, that's one that I did.
That guy is a master.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, go to JimmyCarain.com. I write... a wonderful improv blog, and it's more from a therapy kind of. I just wrote one about the bad show, 10 tips that you can do for offstage that'll help you. There's tips on how to show up to class and get the most out of your class. There's a lot of great. So go to JimmyCarain.com, and of course, the Artist Low comedy classes if you're in Chicago, or if you're listening to this podcast, because I know there's a lot of listeners out there in a lot of different communities that want to have an improv nerd come. We'll do an improv nerd show and do a workshop down there. But you can go to JimmyCarain.com to find that out.
Cool,
and of course, Improvising Better, the guide to the working improviser.
It's very good. I have that on my bookshelf. I've recommended it.
How long did it take
out.
You to read? It's only like 80.
On no time?
Yeah,
like that joke. I think you could get through that in an hour easily.
Yeah, I think the younger generation reads it even faster.
Yeah, it's well, you know, and then but it's not a book. It's not a book that you have to read straight through. I did.
Do you cross reference? Do you go back and reference it?
Yeah, every now and then.
What's your favorite chapter? Am I putting you on the spot?
No. I'm trying to think. My favorite. I think it's actually the. There's a good one in there about just playing. You have to play the opposite gender, which is like such a thing that people don't like do right, and it bothers me. But there's this last one about improv is bigger than you think of it. I think that's what it's called. That's like one of the last two chapters.
Very good.
I like that thought, like that way abstract stuff that like really doesn't have a huge effect on your improv. Right in that moment, but you're like, yeah, cool.
Yeah, because there's so much how you in life that affects on stage. And we say this in the book a little, but improvisation is the most transparent and personal art form. And I don't think people realize it. So if you're getting fucked up, you know, before a show, you're not doing anybody any service.
Yeah.
You know?
It's interesting. I completely agree with that. I think it's just because improv seems so easy that you can treat it without reverence and respect. It's like, you know what I mean? We show up and we do a show, or we show up and we do practice. We don't prepare. We don't really do any. But like, give it something. Give it more than just showing up, you know?
Yep. And the other thing I want to say, a little tip, little thing. You said, you know, improv is all our friends. And you know, when you do it, it's your friends and stuff like that.
Yes.
And it's almost like a religion in terms of agreement. We're there to support and cooperate and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Don't get confused with that what goes on stage and what goes off stage. Meaning, if you're struggling because you don't feel you're good enough, or you've got blocks, or you drink too much, or you overeat, or whatever, go and get help for that stuff. Don't expect that the team's job when you have a bad show is to make you feel great about yourself. Go outside of that system, you know, the improv community, to get that support and to get that help. I think that was the biggest mistake that I made. I'm less fucked up, but when I got there, I was fucked up. I was drinking way too much. I was eating way too much. You know, I'm glad that I got help for that stuff, and I continue to get help for that stuff. But to go in there thinking, oh my God, because improv is a dysfunctional family, you know? And you're like, oh, you know, they're gonna make me feel whole. They're gonna make me feel good. No, that's not their job. On stage, that's their job, to make you look good, but not off stage. So if you need help, if you need to get to a therapist, or you need to get into a 12-step program, or get a freaking life coach or whatever you need, the more support you can get off stage, the better you're going to be on stage.
Totally agree. I'll share it with myself. There was a time before I found improv about 3 years ago where I was totally, I think the best way to look at life is like hopeless.
Really? What was going on?
Nothing bad. Like, that's the sad thing. There's nothing bad. It's just I really didn't have prospects for anything. I wanted to do comedy, and I didn't.
Were you like a really smart student, and then?
No. I wasn't, no. I was right when I got out of college, which is like, or the year between me getting out of college and finding improv.
And like, you didn't have a job?
I had a job.
Okay.
I hated my job. I think there is a way to look at life hopelessly when you don't have prospects of things getting better or like think new things, not challenging things. Uh-huh. When you find a stasis and you're like, this is all I see around me is this, and I don't know how to change it. And it's scary because especially if you come out of a school system, it's very structured. It's very safe.
Where'd you go to school?
Cal State Northridge in the Valley. Awful. But it's a structured system, and it's the way to get better or move on. It makes sense. And once you get out of that, it's scary. And then if you find that stasis, you're like, there's no way to change or move forward. I found my death already at 20. And it was a very scary thing. And, I got into improv and I was like, oh, this is great. I'm finding a reason to live, and which is like a weird thing, like you're talking about. You're like, I was fucked up in a different way. I found a reason to like live and continue to grow and like challenge yourself. And then that became like, oh, I found a reason to take care of myself. Like I found a reason to like, I'm going to eat better. I'm going to exercise. I'm worth it. I'm going to read more. I'm going to learn. I want to be a better version of myself. And I think that I'm agreeing with what you're saying. But it's not that I decided that, ooh, I want more. I want to take care of myself. Is my improv team going to do this? I want to take care of myself. Let me see what I can do to do some stuff for myself. And that, like you're saying, that could be going to therapy. That could be just reading a book and like saying like, there's a good reason to do it, you know?
Or it could be saying no to a project, you know, like no to an improv project.
I can't say no to a project.
Okay. Well, we'll work on that after the podcast, but you know, saying no, like I'm overcommitted. I need a couple nights off for myself so I can recharge, you know?
I think you're right.
Amazing story that really you got a lot of therapeutic stuff out of improv.
Totally.
It boosted your self-esteem.
It's a weird dip to go like, and I had achievements in my college, but yeah, like there was like a thing where it's done. And I think college is really interesting. I've been wanting to write something about this for a while. That as soon as you're done, basically it was like, all right, asshole, like get to work. If you achieve stuff in college, like, what? He's a college student. He achieved something. You achieve something in high school. They're just in high school and you did this thing. You're amazing. But, like, if you do anything outside of, like, that, you're just like, all right, of course you had a job. Do your job, guy. That's your whole – that's what everybody's doing. I think that there's, like, that dip that, like – people caring about what you do or monitoring you or like even, you know, it all just drops, the floor comes out. And it's dealing with that is very tricky.
And I've started to see this. Were you the kind of student, you know, because your generation is the generation where you can't do anything wrong. Everybody gets a trophy. Everybody gets good grades.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And so like, you know, I've been, you know, like it used to be people would come to me in class and say, you know what, Jimmy? Be hard on me. I like it because you're really hard on me. You give me the hard notes that nobody else will give me. You know? I was at Second City once. I taught a class or whatever. And whoever taught before goes, we've never had notes before. You know, and you're like, really?
Okay.
So, but I think that, you know, that's changed, you know?
The generation of, like,
yeah, the generation bat, of bat, bat, and I'm wondering if your hopelessness was part of that. That's product, I mean, that, of that generation.
I mean, that's possible. That's possible. I think. Yeah, what's interesting about, like, I feel like everybody condescends to that generation. Like, everybody gets a trophy, and that's totally valid. Like, I don't know that everybody should get all the encouragement in the world, because I don't know that it's always deserved. Like, they're dealing with failure is an interesting thing, and you can learn a lot from it. I don't think you always want to fail, but learning from it is important. But it's funny, because my parents and all people of your generation will go, like, oh, this, everybody gets a trophy. But it's like, you know who makes it so we all get trophy? It's you guys. You guys were the ones who's like, my son, I didn't get a trophy, and my son should get a trophy. Nobody, we didn't ask for this. But now it's like, oh, you guys all got trophies. I think that's hilarious.
And the other thing that I really loved about improv was, when I was doing it, you know, when I started out, was like, I don't know if you had this experience, but I was like, I was always funny, but I never had a place, you know, like, I never felt like I belonged.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I was the class clown and would make people laugh and stuff like that. And when I finally took my first improv class, I'm like, oh my God, everything that I did up until this point, I'm now getting rewarded in this class. Of course I love this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's not entirely. Yeah. That's totally. I think that's what I'm saying. Like, you come into it because you're funny. You think you're funny. That's,
well, you think, you know, you're funny, and you're like usually an out. You're like an out. You're like, you don't belong anywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, again, that's like I said. I didn't have a lot going on. It was hopeless. It was bad.
What are you going to do?
Move on up. All right, Jim, we got to end it before the battery dies. I'm just afraid we're going to lose the whole audio file.
Okay, we don't want to do that.
Any parting words before I hit end record?
No, thank you so much for this.
Thank you. This was super fun.
It was great meeting you, and continued success.
Thanks, man. This was great. I really loved it.
There it was. I hope you enjoyed that show. Check out Jimmy's podcast, Improv Nerd. He gets a lot of cool guests. It's good times. A couple of quick show plugs for myself. Saturday, March 16th, 8:30 at IOS's Del Close Theater. Six Martin is doing the Roughneck Show. It should be fun. Sunday, March 17th, 6 p.m. at the Clubhouse. I'm on Sketchbar's newest house team, Boom Shakalaka. We're going to be putting up sketches every Sunday for the rest of March. March 17th, March 24th. And March 31st, all at 6 p.m. Be there to see the start of a cool new sketch bar thing. I think you're going to see them at Facebook.com. Ooh, I don't know what their thing is. Go find Sketch Bar. They're at the Clubhouse every Sunday. Anyway, also Sunday, March 17th, Six Martin is doing Catsby at Asylum Lab. The show starts at 8 o'clock. We'll be in the 10 o'clock hour. We are going to do a St. Patrick's Day themed show. We do not know what that means yet, but I suppose it will be fun. All right, that's it. I hope you guys enjoy the show. It is the golden age of improv. Be excellent to each other, and most importantly, happy improvising.
Hey, I'm Ben.
Jeff Ayer.
I'm Ben.
I'm Jeff. Ben, just do it.
I'm sorry. Hey, this is Ben Jeff and Thayer, and we host a podcast called Convince Me, where we have guests on to try to convince us to get on board with their unique obsessions. Check out our podcast. It's called Convince Me.
I'm Jeff.